since we don't have any particular deadline other than the 9 p.m. deadline, but in terms of how much time we spend on a particular topic, we'll try to go methodically. Whatever we cover this week, we'll cover this week. It might be a two-part series with respect to the lineage of Kohanim. It could go on longer. It could be a 10-part series, but I'm not planning to make it more than about two sessions. Also, I mean, we have a couple of Kohanim around the table, but you know, not everyone here is a Kohen, so I don't know the degree of everyone's interest. You know, it's like the question of what happens when there's no Kohen in Shul. In terms of who do you give the first Aliyah with? The Gemara says Nisparda Chavila, where the whole system of hierarchy breaks down, that we unravel the rope. Nisparda Chavila. And the question is, well, do you give to a Levi? Do you give to a Yisrael, who's the biggest Talmud Chacham? Do you give to any Yisrael? Do you bedavka not give to a Levi to show that you don't have to give to a Levi, like where Soloveitchik held? Where Soloveitchik would be upset when they would give it to him if there was no Kohen, because he said that it makes it look like you think you have to give it to a Levi, but you don't have to give the first Aliyah to a Levi. It's Nisparda HaChavila. I said, well, no, we're giving it to you because you're the Rav, you know. Whenever people talk about that sugya, I don't know what they're talking about. It's not halacha lemaisa. It never happened in my entire life. I should have right. never comes up. So to me, the world is very Kohen-centric. These are very urgent in Yanim, but it may not be as urgent, you know, with respect to everybody else. So there are two fundamental issues with respect to establishing the yichus of a Kohanim. One is confirming the identity of somebody as a Kohen, so that we rely upon that status to allow him to duchen, to call him up as a Kohen for the first Aliyah, give him the first Hakafah, and also that it has the ramifications that if we establish that the person is a Kohen, then he's also forbidden from doing certain things. He's forbidden from being Metami Lemesim, not allowed to go to the cemetery, not allowed to be in the same room as a mace. So it's important to confirm a person's identity as a Kohen, both in terms of the privileges and also in terms of the various burdens or responsibilities that come with being a Kohen. And the second issue that comes up nowadays is, what does it take for a person to be defrocked from their kahuna? Not everybody who starts out as a Kohen necessarily wants to remain that way. This is one of the recurring issues that we have in the Beis Din. Somebody who's known as a Kohen, but they're kind of having trouble finding a shidduch, and the years are passing, and now they're 50 years old or so, and most of the women who are available are not mutaros l'kahuna. They've been married before, they're grushos, they're divorcees, or they're women who are balos tshuva, who may have had relations with a non-Jew that makes them into a zona so that they would be prohibited to a Kohen, or they just converted to Judaism and they're a Gioris and they're not allowed to marry a Kohen. So what are the standards by which a person can give up their kahuna? And we'll see that it's not so easy to give up your kahuna, that it's like the Mishnah in Sota says that a woman who's a kahenes, she could be neskaula having the status of a kohenes for purposes of eating truma and the like, if she has relations with somebody who's prohibited to her. But a kohen can never be shorn of his kahuna. A kohen, no matter how badly he sins, you could try really hard, you could do ritzicha, you could do avodah zara, you could do adultery, and it doesn't really matter. A Kohen, I mean, it matters, you know, in terms of the person being punished for terrible Averis, obviously, the Gimel Averis Chamuros, but in terms of a person's status as a Kohen, they will be once a Kohen, you're a Kohen forever. And you just can't really give it up. There's even a Yerushalmi that talks about how if a person is a Kohen, he's committed all kinds of Averis, unless they are Averis, they relate to his kahuna. Like he's married a woman who's prohibited to a Kohen, or he's done something which violates the very essence of kahuna, then generally speaking, we do allow the person to dochen. If they've killed somebody, it's a special pariskem, kapichem, a special pasuk in Yeshayahu that disqualifies them from dochening. But if they're machal Shabbos, or they committed other very bad averos, so generally we say that they're not intrinsically prohibited or disqualified from the dochening, because we don't want them to think that, oh, we're not going to let them dochen, so now they have no responsibilities towards their kahuna anymore, and they could just go and defile themselves in a cemetery. So not so easy to renounce your kahuna. A kohen becomes a kohen is a pitzua daka, a kohen whose organs are shriveled up, preventing them from having a procreative ability. So such a kohen is considered to lose his kedusha on some level, that he would be permitted to marry a gioris. But a gioris probably wouldn't want to marry him then. So that's not really a solution for a person who wants to be able to marry women who are prohibited to the kahuna. A person who's a kohen can't really lose it. But sometimes we say that the chazakah that was established in the first place of them being a kohen, if it was only based on the fact that their name was Kohn or Kagan or something like that, so maybe that's not really considered to be a strong enough chazakah. We have many kohanim nowadays who don't necessarily have a Kohen-related name, like Reis, for example, right? You know, perfectly fine, you know, kahuna family. But and who are kohanim, and then you have families of Kohns and Katzes that are not kohanim. So it works in both the directions. So we want to explore that. Now, the yichus for kahuna impacts upon the following areas. I'll break them down to six different areas. The first is to be a kohen miyuchas. That's like the highest level, the highest category. We are considered to have enough of a history of kohen lineage dating all the way back to the kohanim who did avoda in the Beis HaMikdash that you would be permitted to do avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. That we pretty much do not have nowadays. We don't have kohanim miyuchasim, I readily admit it. It's not, you know, such a stigma because the next the kohen, you know, doesn't have it either. We don't have that type of yuchas nowadays. The second is, I'm sorry? I'm not Rappaport. The second is for Truma De'araisa, even with the Rappaports, I don't know that we would treat them as Kohanim Yuchasim to do a vote in the Beis HaMikdash, but, you know, that's a different story. Truma De'araisa is the second category, and the Rambam is of the opinion that Malam Truma De'araisa Le'yuchsin. If you see a Kohen eating Truma De'araisa, so then you can assume this is a Kohen who has a good status, even for doing avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, that's considered to be good enough. That's why we're very cautious that, now, according to the Rambam, you can't allow somebody to eat Truma De'araisa unless you know for sure that they could do avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, because we're Mala. We say that one is sort of an indication that the other is good. So, but we don't have Truma De'araisa nowadays. As the Rambam says, you require Bias Kulchem, you need the majority of Jews to be living in Eretz Yisrael in order to have Truma De'araisa nowadays. The same is true with respect to Challah De'araisa, the challah that we take, even in Eretz Yisrael.
Close to that, though.
We're getting close. We're getting close. And, you know, like, for example, for Challah, when it comes to certain things like Yovel, so Yovel, we require Kol Yoshvei Aleh in a way that, according to the Gemara in Erchin, where everybody, all the different Shvatim are settled in their different areas. And the Chazon Ish confirms that as well. But that's probably not true in the case of Challah. In the case of Challah, all that we require is that a majority of Jews live in the land of Eretz. So we're getting very close. According to the latest Pew surveys, maybe Rabbi Matenki knows, I know we're up to what, 47%, 48%? We're, you know, not that these numbers are so perfect because you don't know who's really Jewish, who's representing themselves as Jewish, and so forth, but we're getting pretty close. That's going to be a question mark. But both for Truma De'araisa and Challah De'araisa, that doesn't apply nowadays. Even in Eretz Yisrael, when you take Challah, it's only the Rabbanah nowadays. And outside of Eretz Yisrael, when there's no De'araisa obligation to begin with to take Challah, the Challah that we take is surely, it's called Challah Schutz La'aretz, which is a lower level of the Rabbanah. That was something that at a certain point in time was considered to be lenient enough that you could give to Kohanim nowadays as well, as long as they were Tahor. Because a Kohen who's Tamei Meis, that came into defilement with the dead, they can eat Challah. But if they have Tumah Yotze Migufo, they're a Baal Keri or they're a Zav or something like that, they wouldn't be allowed to. So that's why there used to be a minhag to give Challah Chutz La'aretz to a Kohen Katan, a Kohen who wasn't yet old enough to have a Rias Keri or something of that variety. So they give it to like an 8-year-old boy. Or they give it to a Kohen Gadol who went to the mikvah. So there used to be such a practice. It's a question whether we still have that practice nowadays with respect to challah that can't be burnt in, like on Pesach, where you just let the challah sit. Maybe it's going to become chometz, so maybe you have to give it to a Kohen Gadol. And that was an old discussion. But in any event, the Truma Derabbanan is the third category. That's Truma that we have nowadays. Fourth category that we have is things that we would call shivchei kahuna, privileges of the kahuna, like pidyon habein, for which a kohen receives some sort of a benefit. A kohen receives a benefit for receiving the pidyon habein money. That's something that we do nowadays. I occasionally am called upon to be a kohen for pidyon habein. It's a good racket. You can make some money. So that's a privilege of being a kohen. That's a shivchei kahuna where there's a rebuch. And then there's a fifth category where there's a benefit to a kohen, but where there isn't a rebuch. There's no profit motive. Like receiving the first aliyah, it's a kibud. For some people, kibudim is more important than money, but it's not actual money that you're receiving in your hands, or you have the privilege of dochening. For the privilege of dochening, you're not getting paid for dochening either, but on the other hand, it's a beautiful thing to be able to do. And then there's a sixth, the final and the last category is the notion that you become a kohen to become usher with respect to do things that are forbidden to a kohen, such as going to cemeteries or marrying women who are prohibited to a kohen, like a grusha, a gioris, or a zona. So the Rambam. So I have here a series of questions. Okay, so the series of questions. The first one is: someone shows up in shul, claims to be a kohen. We don't know anything about him or his family. Do we believe him? Obviously, if you know the person has a chazakah that their father, dochin, and was known to be a kohen, and the grandfather dochin, and so forth, so then you assume that the person is a kohen. But when they just show up in shul and they say they're a kohen, does it matter whether we know him to be Jewish altogether? We mentioned last year that we paskin mi'ikar adin, a person who shows up, at least it used to be the case, we paskin like Rabbeinu Tam, a person who says, you don't know me, but I'm Jewish. So we believe them. Even if they don't come from a mishpacha yidua, we generally assume, the majority of poskim assume that such a person is believed to be Jewish. But do we apply the same standard to say that if he also throws in that he's a kohen, that we would assume he's a kohen? Now, even with respect to Jewishness, we do a little bit more investigation nowadays because there is, especially if a person comes from afar, like the commentary, the Beis Hillel, rules, who's quoted by the Be'er Heitev at the beginning of Eben Ezer, that it's a special stringency when it comes to Yuchsin, that we don't want to take any chances to just cause a person who's not Jewish to somehow assimilate into the community without proper investigation. So we do proper investigation, particularly for purposes of marriage. But mi'ikar hadin, a person is believable, even if we are able to establish that they're Jewish. Do we still then believe them when we say, "You are Kohen Levi Yisrael"? You say, "Oh, I'm a Kohen." So do we believe them? Is there a difference between giving him the Kohen Aliyah or Dochening? Because with the Kohen Aliyah, he's not going to be making a brachal of Batala. If he Dochens and he says, "Shekhet Ishana B'dushasso Shalavan," he's not really B'dushasso Shalavan, so it could be a brachal of Batala. What about believing him in terms of giving him Pidyon HaBein? Pidyon HaBein, you might say, okay, you'll believe somebody to say he's a kohen to get an aliyah because he's not getting any extra money out of it. You'll believe him to dochen because that's also a responsibility. He wouldn't take it upon himself unless he knew it to be true. Why would he want to make a brachal of Batala? He's not getting any money for dochening, but maybe we shouldn't believe him in terms of giving him Pidyon HaBein money. Pidyon HaBein money, over the last several years, it went up quite a bit because it's basically the value of 100 grams of silver. 5 shkalim is about, each shekel is about 19.6 grams of silver. So we round it up, 100 grams of silver. Not bad. Price of silver has gone up quite a bit. During the peak of COVID, it was like crazy. Like 100 grams of silver was worth like over $100 or so. So it was pretty good. Now I think it went down a bit. Now it's like around $75.
Isn't there a concern that I'm not fulfilling the mitzvah if he's not a kohen?
We're going to get to that. Yeah. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden was very concerned about that. Rabbi Yaakov Emden felt that nowadays we're not really sure that the kohanim, that you can trust anybody as really being a kohen. So he said, anytime you have a chance, if you require a pidyon habein, you see somebody who is considered to be a kohen, just give him pidyon habein money. Just do it like with everybody, just to cover yourself, because hopefully you'll get one who's really a kohen. Because he didn't trust that you could say for sure that any of them are definitely kohanim. That's what the Chassam Sofer said. So he said that you don't have to keep on repeating yourself. That's our general practice is that when you give the pidyon habein money once, you don't have to worry about finding another kohen. So the Rambam distinguishes between Kohane Miyukos and Kohane Chazaka. So if you take a look at the Rambam, this is source Aleph. Ko Kohanim is Manazeb Chazakim Kohanim. So he said that nowadays it's just a chazaka. It's a presumption of being Kohanim because your father, your grandfather were Kohanim, but we can't trace the lineage all the way back to the Beis Hamikdash. So he says, therefore, we only allow eating Truma Derabbanan. Can't eat Truma Deraisa. Nowadays, we don't even have Truma Derabbanan because they say everybody's Tameh and we can't, and therefore we don't eat Truma, even Truma Derabbanan we don't eat anymore. Bein Oklin Elevakachi Gavul, therefore only Truma Derabbanan can be eaten. If it's a Torah level truma chala, so that is considered to be on par with doing a vod in the Beis Hamikdash. Therefore, so he draws a distinction between Kohane Miyuchas and Kohane Chazaka. Kohane Miyuchas, you need two edim. You need two edim to declare that's halacha based. Not only is the person a kohen, but they could say, this person's a Kohen, the father was a Kohen, the grandfather was a Kohen, the great-grandfather was a Kohen, all the way back to Aaron a Kohen. If not to Aaron a Kohen, to the following Kohen who did a Voda in the Beis HaMikdash, you have to be able to testify. You need two Edom to be able to testify all the way back. So we can readily understand that this is very, very rare. I'm not Rappaport. Most Kohanim are not Rappaport. So, even if Rappaport can do it, the rest of us can't. So this is considered to be, Rappaport is considered to be the most Miyuchistic Kohen family. I don't know why, but that's what I was told. I believe it. But, if you're a Rappaport, okay, think Rabbi Moshe David Tendler, one of his daughters married a Rappaport who's a Kohen, Rabbi Shapsi Rappaport. So maybe there we have Kohen Miyuchas. But generally speaking, most people are not on the level that they can trace themselves all the way back to Kohanim who did Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, even if the Rappaports, for whatever reason, are able to do that. So the Shulchan Aruch rules according to the Rambam, basically. But for Truma D'Rabbanan, one aid suffices. Now, if you take a look at the Shulchan Aruch, this is in Siman Gimel. If a person just says that they're a Kohen, they're not believed, okay, that's the psak of the Rambam, because the Rambam said that I need one aid nowadays to testify a person is a Kohen in order to eat from Truma Derabbanan. But if I don't even have that much, we don't trust the person to be a Kohen altogether. But that's because the Rambam was assuming that there's still going to be people eating Truma on a Derabbanan level. However, the Ramah, if you take a look in source base, in the Haggah, so the Ramah says that nowadays if a person shows up and they declare themselves a Kohen, we do believe them, at least for purposes of calling them to the Torah, or a duchening, v'yesh omim, d'nemar, likros b'tor rishon, lisos kapa b'zman hazeh. Why is that? She'en lanu truma deraisa, shenachu shem yalu osa l'truma. So says the Ramah, that nowadays we don't even have the possibility of eating truma deraisa. Of course, our practice is we don't even eat truma derabbanan, but we don't even have the possibility of eating truma deraisa. So therefore, you don't have to worry that it's going to lead to any kind of a mechshol. That's what he says.
When was the last time period that Truma Derabbanan was actually eaten?
I don't know. It's a good question. We'll see that there was some discussion about eating chalas kutzlaritz. So the chelkas mechokek says mamakom sheinogim etchuma klal. As Yeshlikro so betorad lonafik mene chorbo kamoshe nasto shenasto aron amagin tam leminag shalano. That the Ron and the Magen Mishnah give an explanation for our minag that we trust people when they say that they are Kohanim, because it's not going to lead to any kind of korban, it's not going to lead to any kind of a mishap, since the Kohanim are not going to end up eating any kind of truma nowadays at all.
Why should we assume with the Chosesh that the person who thinks that they're necessarily that they're Kohen, that they're going to be violating Isser of Truma Lahule?
Well, maybe they don't think that they're going to be violating the Issa, but we're worried that they're going to violate the Issa. In other words, it's not because they have such a motive to eat Truma, but maybe they really think that they're Kohanim, but we don't want to cause truma to be violated. We have a responsibility. Shmartim es mishmarti, that we have to see to it. The truma is eaten b'tara, so we're worried about it. If they don't have a requisite proof that they're really kohanim. So the Rama allows for this type
but
of.
Even if they did have proof,
yeah,
they're tomes.
Now let's say that they were able to go to the mikvah and so forth, okay, and take care of that. So we'd be able to resolve that particular problem. So the Rama does seem to indicate that even though they don't have any kind of edus whatsoever, just through their own say so, we're going to allow them to dukkan. So that's a question. I understand. To give them an aliyah is, there's no real harm done. You give somebody who's not a kohen the first aliyah, so it's an aliyah. So, no, bracha has been made levatala, but nesias kapayim, it could be a potential bracha levatala. So there are a couple of different answers that are given regarding this. One answer is that since there's an iser essay on kohanim, somebody who really is a kohen, not to dochen, kosev baruch hu es b'nei Yisrael amur lahem, that when you are called up, you have a real obligation to dochen. So therefore, we say it's kind of like a wash. If we're not going to let him dochen, so then we're going to force him to violate a mitzvah's essay. So therefore, since the person's not getting any monetary benefit for it, so we're going to trust them when it comes to this issue. The Aruch HaShulchan says, look, me'ikar adin, we say, eidecha neman b'isurin, even b'makom d'iskazik isura, to the extent that we don't trust the edus of a kohen nowadays, the edus of someone to be a kohen, it's only what we call a mala, that we make a mala, because kahuna is such a special privileged category, so we're going to have stricter standards, but since it's only a mala, we're going to be mako with respect to things that are not like eating, truma or kachim, at be'isser, and in any event, it's only in the Beis HaMikdash where the Kohanim would pronounce the Shem HaMefurish that you had, a real serious problem. So therefore, they say that you could be mako with respect to allowing these things. But it's interesting. I saw in the Chavkas Mechokek, he does say something over here. He says that although he quotes the Ran and the Magid Mishnah, who gave a time that we're mako about these things, they say, Apo Piken in Roy Lasos Ken. Nonetheless, you really shouldn't rely upon this lechatzchila. You should see to it that the person has some sort of a cheskas kehuna before you allow them to duchen or to get the first aliyah and so forth. There should be some sort of a history that the person comes with from some other community that they were known. The family was known as kohanim. Lo yikari b'tara klal piatzmo apem makom she'ein nogim b'truma klal. And therefore, you really, even in a place where nowadays there's no eating of truma, not deraisa, not derabanan, we still do require a little bit of extra comfort to make sure that the person really is a kohen. That there should be some history, there should be some record about it, and that's because there's, as I said, sort of a higher level with respect to cheskas kahuna. The Gemara indicates that as well. And number two, I saw in the Sefer Eben Berua, which is a new Sefer on Eben Ezer, that he says that we also need to be suspicious that even if the Kohen right now is just saying that, okay, all that I really want to do is I want to duchen and I want to get the first aliyah, eventually someone's going to approach him with pidyon abein money. So there is going to be some, money in it for him as well. So therefore, we have to just, require a little bit of evidence when it comes to these things.
The guy that lands at the airport comes to your shul for yahrzeit and says, I'm kohen and I have yahrzeit today, we have to say we only give aliyahs to the people in our shul that we know?
Again, for the long term, certainly we would want a little bit, more evidence, or we would want more of a comfort level. If it's a milsa davide legluye, like a person says they're a kohen, and you can always check out the family, you could check out the community they come from, so you know that you'll, and they know, that you have a chance to investigate them. But, if a person really can't be easily investigated, then, probably, yeah. There should be a little bit more investigation. No. And the Chazanish, the crisis. The Chazanish says that really we are supposed to do much more homework when it comes to the Kohanim, but we don't. And therefore, he says that the Chazakah is not nearly as strong as it could have been or should have been, even Bizman Azeh, because of the fact that we don't have activists, but they did. We don't have, the activist Dayarim. I mean, we'll have to change that, you know, here in Chicago, maybe, you know, who really are aggressive in terms of weeding out, you know, people who are making false claims, and we too easily and readily accept a person's claim that they're Kohanim.
Well, you know, when we moved to Denver, about 2 weeks after we were there, I got a call from the Chevra Kedisha, and they asked me if I would be willing to volunteer to assist. I said, I'm a Kohen. And they go, really?
Yeah.
I just trying to get out of working with the Chevra Kedisha. I say, hey, my father told me I was a Kohen, so...
Right, so that's the question. If your father told you, you know, how good is that considered to be evidence bisman is this? So say it's good enough evidence for certainly the Aliyah and Dukkanin is considered good enough evidence. What's also considered, thank you very much, good evidence. So I also have this, so this is, you know...
I wouldn't wait Rocco La Tal against the essay.
No, that's all right.
Against not Dukkanin.
What?
The potential Rocco La Tal versus the essay against not Dukkanin.
Right, so we say that it's a little bit of a wash. It's a confusing Tosfos that says, oh, what's so bad if you make, you know, a bracha, you know, on the Dukkanin and you're not a Kohen, that people struggle with exactly what Tosfos meant with respect to that. But the mainness seems to be if you would say the Shem HaMefarsh, which was only in the base HaMikdash. Right. But it's a good question. Now, the Shulchan Aruch also says that a person might not know of their status as a Kohen, but they could be Mesiach Lepitumo, meaning that this is in the days when they would eat Truma. A person might say, oh, I remember when I was a young child and I was on my father's shoulders, that source Dalet, and he took me from school and he made me go to the mikvah in order to eat Truma, and I was called, oh, Yochanan Ochel Chalos, Yochanan who eats, you know, the Truma and the Chalos. And Rebbe, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, just said, oh, this fellow is definitely a Kohen. Then there's this whole sidebar discussion, because this is a quote from the Rambam. The Rambam threw in Hosiyani Mibes HaSefer. Why did he throw in Hosiyani Mibes HaSefer? We discussed this a little bit with respect to the Yuxin of Yisrael, that it seems that the Rambam is worried about a mute, Choshesh in the mute, particularly, you could say, when it comes to the Yuxin of a Kohen, that it's possible that maybe he ate Truma, because he's an Eved, because an Eved Kohen is allowed to eat Truma. So it doesn't necessarily prove that he's a Kohen and his family are Kohanim. But if he went to school, he went to yeshiva, so the Eved doesn't go to yeshiva. So then that's why they threw in, oh, he remembers Hosiyanim Beis HaSeif. That's what the Beis Shmuel says. The Beis Shmuel says it's a machlokas between the Rambam and the Torah, to the Shonis and the Magen Mishnah, how to understand the halacha. Whether if a person comes from, let's say, Mishpacha She'eni Yudua, you can, you know, trust their testimony or not. The Torah says we could trust anybody, and he doesn't have the word Hosiyani Mibes HaSefer, that I went to school. And the Rambam has this lashon of, oh, I went to, and I went to school. The Piskei Teshuva says this is not necessarily a proof of anything. He quotes the Shlomo HaMelech, who says, no, in fact, the Rambam and the Mechaber, certainly the Mechaber, is not of the opinion that a person that we worry about a mute when it comes to these when it comes to these matters, but rather he says that we're talking about an individual who's not self-asserting that he's a Kohen. He's just saying, I don't know what I am, and this is what happened to me when I was a child. So since he's saying, I don't know what I am, therefore we need a higher degree of evidence. He has to say, oh, I went to school, so we know that he's not an Eved. But if a person comes along and he says, oh, I definitely know that I am a Kohen, so then we're not going to worry that the person is an Eved. This is also an important principle, because sometimes people come to us, they're Baalei Tshuva, and they don't know what they are. They don't know what they are, so then some of the types of evidence that they might be relying upon, whether it's grave markers, things like that, are a little bit more suspicious than a person who grew up their entire life, and they knew that they were a Kohen, but they're able now to buttress that information, you know, with further proof and further corroboration. Like, I grew up, I always knew I was a Kohen. My father was a Kohen, my grandfather was a Kohen, my uncle was a Kohen, you know, so it was pretty clear. So I can rely upon that chazaka alone. But you know, with me, so it's nice. So one of my cousins recently came across the archives of my grandparents' papers, my father's side. So he found my grandparents' ksuba from the 1920s. And I never saw my grandparents' ksuba because my father didn't have it. His older brother had it. So the older brother's grandson was going through his records. It was like somebody in every family is like fascinated about genealogy, So that's, so I have this cousin who's like fascinated about genealogy. Turns up all kinds of like grave markers and, people like I never heard of before and things like that. So, he came across my grandfather's ksuba. So it's very nice. So this is, if I am an Ava Moshe HaKohen. So, okay, good. So it helps to buttress it. But if a person is coming from, from a place of no knowledge, whatsoever, so then, some of the pieces of evidence are not necessarily as strong. So the Ber Heitev asks, the obvious question. A lot of Ber Heitevs when it comes to this particular sugya. I think he took, a particular interest. This is Rabbi Yehuda Tikhtin Ashkenazi, an early 1700s figure. He wrote the Ber Heitev on Orach Chaim and Eben HaEsser. Others wrote Ber Heitev on Yeridei HaKoshim Mishpat. Ber Heitev is like a team of different people who wrote, different parts of the commentary, like the Piskei Tshuva. I love the Piskei Tshuva. Piskei Tshuva really only exists on Eben HaEsser, HaKoshim Mishpat, and Yeridei. And it's phenomenal. There never was a Piskei Tshuva on Orach Chaim. But, if you have a lacuna, somebody's going to fill it. So it didn't stop some later authority from writing a sefer called Piskei Tshuva on Orach Chaim, which is a great little sefer. It's much, much shorter. Tiny, tiny, teeny little sefer, much shorter than the Orach, and the Mishneh Berurah had it. When the Mishneh Berurah quotes a lot of esoteric achronim, often he's just quoting them straight from the Piskei Tshuva. It was a little, it was a sefer. It was written by somebody else, like the main sefer Piskei Tshuva was finished in the early 1800s or so, and this sefer was late 1800s, so it quotes, more authorities, so somebody else. The Ber Heitev is, I think, maybe at least three different people. But on Orach Chaim and Eben HaEsser, so this is who it is. It's Rav Tikhtin, and Yehuda Tikhtin Ashkenazi, and he has a lot to say on this particular subject of Kuhuna. So he asked over here, V'yesh L'Akor, Ne'eman Lishem Elohei Slav Mishul Pidyon Avein. So if we're believing a person in terms of their Kuhuna, like the Rama writes, what about Pidyon Avein? Meino Ne'eman Olediki Yisur Daraisu Ne'enek Imkein. If he wouldn't be believed, the Pidyon Avein, because as the Beis Shmuel says, we're worried about a situation where a person's going to get a rebach, so then he leaves it completely as a tzarachiyun. And it is, in fact, a pretty good tzarachiyun, but the answer could be that, look, the Pidyon Avein, it's true, we're doing him a favor, but he's also doing us a favor. Most people, who are doing Pidyon Avein, they're doing it in order to satisfy their own mamonous obligation. So, the more Kohanim that we have available, potentially, to collect Pidyon Avein, the better. But it is a bit of a question mark. Shouldn't we draw gradations between those where there is an actual edus establishing them as a Kohen and where there's not? Now, according to the Chumrah of the Chelkas Mechokek, that we don't rely upon the Ramah L'Chatchila, so that covers the Ber Heitev's question. So that might be a good reason for the Chumrah, that we do want to find some sort of evidence before we definitively establish somebody as a Kohen. The first to really cast doubts about the status of Kohanim Bizman Hazeh, I'm only quoting it to be thorough. I don't want anybody to think that I have any agreement with this. But the first to really cast any aspersions was the Maharshal. The Maharshal that sourced Chesk, obviously a contemporary of the Ramah, we're going back to the 16th century, of Shlomo Luria. So he asked the question about what if a priest, talking about Charamim, we know that there are 24 Matnos Kahuna, 24 gifts that go to Kohanim, and one of them is Charamim, that if you're going to be Machrim, you're going to ban from yourself certain items, so there's a Machlokis in the Mishnah about whether Stam Charamim go to Kohanim or Stam Charamim go to Bedek Abayis. We assume that a Charam, a regular Charam, goes to a Kohen. A person says, okay, I'm giving away my possessions as a Charam, it's supposed to go to Kohanim. So how come I'm not getting more Charamim nowadays? I guess people aren't making as many Charamim. But if you make a Charam, so that's one of my 24 Matnas Kunas. So what's going on over here? So Yamsha Shlomo says that it's not because we paskin like the day that says Stam Charamim Lebeda Kabayis. Even a person's Pirish Lekohen. Even a person says, I want my Charamim to go to a Kohen, We don't, he says, we don't allow it nowadays. Why is it we don't allow it to go to Kohanim nowadays? Because he says, Me'achad Shibon Hussein Rabbi Mainlano Yichus. We just don't have good lineage when it comes to Kuna, Kemoshaya Bisman Abayas, or Filo Akara Korban. Even in the days of the Tanaim and the Moraim, they still had Chumos and Taros, and, you know, it was still kind of a lingering continuation from the times of the Beis HaMikdash. He says everything got all mixed up. It's the halavai. We shouldn't end up, you know, having non-Jews mixed together with Jews. However, one thing I can tell you for sure, says the Marashal, that, you know, people who call themselves Kohanim and Levim, we don't know who's telling the truth or who has a reliable tradition. And if they're not all, you know, a bunch of imposters, at least the majority is. So it doesn't sound so good. And he gives us some sort of a story from Chazal for that. If you're going to tell me it's not the majority, okay, he starts, I mean, he is kind of, you know, making it more attenuated as he goes along. If not everybody, most of them. If not most of them, then half of them. So maybe if you gave him a chance to keep on going, he said, well, one or two. But he says, certainly about half of them are mixed up, of non-Kohanim with Kohanim. But he says that even if you gave it to somebody who claims to be a Kohen, or has what we call he's a Kohen Chazaka nowadays, not good enough, he wouldn't be allowed to enjoy the Charamim, because maybe it would be considered to be a misappropriation of a Hekdesh. Therefore he says, that's why nowadays we don't give the Chali even to a Kohen, who is a katan, who has no impurity coming out of his body, says it's not our practice nowadays. Shemachi gamkin nago in a shloitin a kalaf koin katan. A koin shetavu the kiryo. Somebody or koin went to the mikvah. Shem the lomachas kinim is manas of the koin vada. And of course, the marriage dam took it to the next step. He was dealing with, you know, a koin is not allowed to marry a woman who was taken captive, because maybe she was defiled by her non-Jewish captors and she'd be prohibited to a Jew, to a koin, excuse me. So what if there's another woman who testifies about her that she was not defiled? So he says it's a suffix whether you can rely upon that, but he says and nonetheless, he quotes the Rivash that our Kohanim are not Vadai Kohanim nowadays, and the fact that we call up a person who is thought to be a Kohen first to the Torah, that's just a minig b'alma. It's a custom, it's not a din. Why? Because they don't have Sefer Yachas. It's like when, you know, they came back, they were told by Nechemi, Harei Atem Meches Koskan, you can keep whatever chazaka you had beforehand. Okay, but maybe that counts for something. But says the Marashdam, nah, we don't have any Sefer Yuchsin, so they're not Kohani Vadai. So the Marashdam created a whole genre of literature that continues Adayom Azeh, much to my chagrin. Adayom Azeh created this whole genre of literature, which if there are situations where there's a question whether a Kohen can marry a certain woman, is she prohibited to a Kohen, not prohibited to a Kohen, we're not 100% sure, is she really a Gioris, is she really a Grush, and so forth. So you have many poskim who will throw in, well, it's a suffix, number one, to begin with, and it's really a sfeik-sfeika. Why is it a sfeik? Therefore, we could be maker. Why is it a sfeik-sfeika? Because suffix, that maybe she's really permitted to a Kohen, and suffix that, Kohanim nowadays, who knows? If they're really Kohanim. So that all started with the Marashdam. Marashdam, because the Yamsha Shlomo, the Marashal, did not say that we're going to use this Sevara to permit a Kohen to marry a woman where it's iffy if she's permitted to him. We just said we're going to be machmir not to confer certain privileges where we're afraid that we're going to be violating Kachin by giving like Haramim, things that would be Hekdesh to a Kohen. But the Marashdam took it to the next level. Therefore, he says that we have basically a sfeika. Suffik Kohen, Suffik Yisrael. Maybe the person's a Kohen, maybe they're not. And even if they're a Kohen, maybe this woman is permitted to him. In this particular case, the whole institution of Shibuya is only a Suffik altogether whether she was violated. So he came up with this big kula. And the Shavus Yaakov famously applied it to a case of a Kohen who marries a Chalutza. You know, if a Kohen marries a Suffolk Chalutza, like it's not clear, it's not clear it's a Chalutza, like not clear she needed the Chalutza, she's a Suffolk Chalutza, so Chalutza, the Yisro Chalutza to a Kohen is only Midrabanan. people don't realize, you think that a Kohen can marry an Almana, so any woman who's a widow is Mutter to Muteris Kohen. It's not true. If a woman is a widow, but she didn't have any children from her husband, so she needed to do Chalitza with the brother-in-law, then she's prohibited to a Kohen. That's an Issa D'Rabbanan. It's an Issa D'Rabbanan. And sometimes there are mistakes. People overlook that particular Issa. They say, oh, they had children. This happened recently, a number of years ago. There was a case where the rabbi remarried the widow to a Kohen. He said, she's a widow, she can marry a Kohen, because they had children. But he didn't ask, are these children the natural children of your late husband? They weren't, they were adopted. In the meantime, they're already married. So that's a bit of a problem. So you have to check that a Kohen's not allowed to marry a Chalutza. But let's say she's a Safek Chalutza for whatever reason. So we say a Safek Chalutza is married to a Kohen, so he's allowed to remain married to a Safek Chalutza, because we say that's a Safek Derabbanan. Because Chalutza is anyway a Din Derabbanan, she's a Safek Chalutza, so it's a Safek Derabbanan. So Shvus Yaakov said, well, let's say a Kohen marries a woman who's a Vaidei Chalutza. He wasn't supposed to, he made a mistake. So he said, well, maybe we should say it's also a Safek Derabbanan, because of the fact that nowadays, even though she's a Vaidei Chalutza, he's a Safek, whether he's a Kohen. So I'm going to treat that as a Safek Derabbanan, and therefore he wouldn't have to divorce her. So there was this whole genre. The Beis Ephraim took it to the next level, and he said that maybe it's particularly bad, you know, as we go on in time. So he says that after you had the pogroms and so forth, he's going back he says, Rakata Bidoros Acharonim. This is going back to not hate. This is going back almost, I don't know how many longs. This is many years ago, maybe going back 800 years ago or so. Bidoros Acharonim Achara Geishim Shikar Levadai. That we had a lot of pogroms that took place. Now, of course, you say, what do you mean Tatnu? We're in Tashpag. So Tatnu didn't happen yet. This is the previous, you know, millennium. So this is a long time ago, the Tatnu. So he says that he says, why is it that we don't duchen every single day as Kohanim? So he says, usually we assume because in Chutz La'aretz we're miserable. Like, you know, we have a lot of distractions, and we have a lot of stresses and misfortunes. Now, the Sfaradim are happy-go-lucky, but the Ashkenazim are always depressed and stressed and so forth. So therefore, only on Yontif are we truly happy enough to duchen. So he says, no, I'll tell you why we only duchen on Yontif, because we're not sure they're really Kohanim. So therefore, we restrict the amount of their duchening as much as possible. Kadesh shel tishtachek toras kunim ayem. Darim parakazor, gabi abaya, deshokam matantam, amala yom, adikipur, lak sukinav shibikani. He says that we only do it like every once in a while, so we'll remember that these people are the ones that we consider to be Kohanim. But otherwise, he says that we don't do it more than 12 days a year because of the fact that we can't be moxic them to be Kohanim. Gemurim Mamish go down about 10 lines from Dinas Elush Nis Babu Abe. He also knows, he quotes the Rashal. Ubeprat, he says, Kohanim Hamon, Kohanim nowadays, Shenim Yomdim Mekomachat Sabab Klau. They don't really know their forebears at all. They know how many people can go back like hundreds of years or whatever. It's just for somebody at some point in time said, hi, I'm a Kohen. And as a result, that's why they became known as Kohanim. As Kohanim. So he says, and this happens, he says that all the time. People come along and they say, hi, I'm a Kohen. And then we find that afterwards some visitor comes from their town and says, they're not Kohanim. I knew his father, and I knew his uncle, and you know, all his cousins. None of them are Kohanim. Or they make mistakes. So therefore, he says that this is the reason why we don't have them duchen that often. So that's a very interesting comment by the Beis Ephraim. However, if you look at the Be'er Heitev again coming to the rescue in Hilchos Nesi'as Kapayim, he quotes the Magen Avraham in Siman Reish Aleph. The Magen Avraham was dealing with the following question that's in Source Tezayin. Says, why is it, you know, when we honor a Kohen, it's not only with giving him the first Aliyah and having him benched that we honor him, but we're supposed to honor the Kohen by giving him a Mana Rishon. It's like a big, you know, a Suda where everybody gets together. First of all, he's supposed to be the Rosh HaMedabim, but he's also supposed to get a Chelek Yopeh if you have a big gathering and a Suda. And there's a big line in which people, you know, want to get the chore. I always wondered about this myself, you know, like it's after davening and Shabbos, and, you know, people are kind of jostling with each other to get the chore. Why don't they say, hey, the Kohen's here. You know, let him take the chore. It never happens to me, you know. I always wondered about it. So mugging him up, ask the question. Why is it that, right, why is it that we're not, like, steering the Kohen to the front of the line? He should be able to take the chore first. So mugging him up says, yeah, well, but Sarki, and then look at the last two lines in Tez Zayim. There's a din mekidash to. You have to honor the coin on a deraisa level. You figure people would be careful about this. So he says, it could be because we just figure we're not so bucky and who's really a coin. So, you know, we'll let them wait online with everybody else. So the Be'er Heitev quotes this Magen Avraham in Source of Yudalev. And he says, the Knesset Yecheskel, Sefer Knesset Yecheskel, very eminent Achron, takes a very sharp disagreement with this, Karkasov, and he's not the only one. You have this Rav Yair Bachrach, many hundreds of years ago, also spoke very strongly about this. He said, Karkasov Chalila, Mahotzi Laza, Yechusei Kunim Bizmanazet. That Karkasov Shalom, that we should say that the Kohani Chazakam Ani are of a lower level. In fact, Rav Yair Bachrach, he's known for his Shailos Tshuvos Chavos Yair. But he also wrote other Shailos Tshuvos where he collected like a runner of Chavim as well, called the Chut HaShani. So in his Shailos Tshuvos L'Chut HaShani, so he says that actually he thinks that Kohanim nowadays have a leg up on some of the Kohanim of yesteryear, because it used to be that you had different gradations of Kohanim. You had your Kohani Yuchus, and you had, you know, then you had your lower level of Kohani Chazaka, who didn't have, you know, the same level of Yuchsin dating all the way back to the base of Mikdash. Now he says that there are no Kohani Yuchus anymore, really. With apologies to Rappaport, there are no Kohani Yuchus anymore. So he says, we don't have gradations. We don't have gradations, that all the Kohanim are on the same level. They're all Kohani Chazaka. And since they're all exactly on the same level, so therefore, there's no lower level of Kohanim. Now everybody's on the same high level. So he said that if anything, you have to treat Kohanim with greater respect. The Yoruch HaShulchan also has a throwaway line along the same direction, where she says, V'yesh Toim. He says, there are those who make a mistake. I want to make it very clear. This is a mistake. Because they can't go back to Aaron HaKohen, or at least to the base of Mikdash. He also says, God forbid to say that. He says, it's really only a Mala B'Alma that this would be required. And once you have cheskas kahuna, so we rely upon that. In fact, the Ramah in Siman Tov Nun Zayin says that when you do make a dough on Pesach and you're afraid, it's yantiv, so you can't burn the dough, and if it just sits there, it's going to become chometz. So what are you going to do? So he says, when you're taking the challah, he says, give it to a kohen katan. He says, it's 100% to get your mutter. But then he quotes the Marivayel afterwards, says, yesh omen, she'ei machlin l'challah b'zman l'zeh l'shem kohen, like the Maharshal had said. So the Mishnah Berurah talks about that, because he says, she'ei machsik moso k'kohen v'adeh, the dilman iskai l'achas mimoso. The Mishnah Berurah gives another consideration. There's the one consideration, that maybe the person's not really a kohen. The Mishnah Berurah says, you know, other things can happen. If you had a father, a grandfather, a great-grandfather from the paternal kohen line who married a woman who was a grusha or a gioris prohibited to a kohen, so then that creates chololos, and then the next generation would not have kedushas kohen anymore, would become a cholol. But he says that the Ramah doesn't really hold like the last opinion that he quoted. He really holds like the first opinion, that even nowadays you can give to a katan or a gadol shetov l'kiruyo, and that's what the Shach says in Yoredeya, Siman Shinchav Beis as well. However, the Prima Gadim says that he didn't really see that anybody does this, but the Mishnah Berurah says, in Medino Seinu, where I live in Lithuania, Yesh Beis HaMekomah, Shinos in the Kohen Gadol Shetov l'kiruyo b'Pesach. that there are still places where they give it to either a Kohen Gadol or to a Kohen Gadol who goes to the mikvah, so that we do rely upon this with respect to Chalas Chutz La'aretz. And the Magen Avraham explains, because this is like a time when you absolutely need to give it to a Kohen, because otherwise it's going to look very, very suspicious, since it's so obvious that there's nothing else that you can do with the dough. So if you didn't give it to a Kohen, so then you would really be casting aspersions on them in a very, very big way. So therefore, we avoid casting aspersions in a very big way when it comes to these times. However, the Chazon Ish in Source Yud Zayin says, Lemaise, we don't do that. According to our minhag is that we don't give Chalas Chutz La'aretz to Kohen Katan. I never got it when I was a Katan, I'll admit it. V'gadol shetavah l'kiryo, and I was never told, oh, go to the mikveh and we'll give you Chalas Chutz La'aretz either. No, I've never offered that option. And he quotes the Magen Avraham, according to the Ma'ariel, the Mishum Shein Lenu Kohen Vadai, because we don't have Kohen Vadai nowadays. So he says that we can't, why can't we do it? He says that if we don't have any Truma, then a Kohen is believed for Tadukhin, Akim and Deleka Revach Badava, because he's not getting any gain over it. So that would be permissible. And he says that galusenu, and really, we have a principle that once a person is believed to duchen, so we could be male from duchening for him eating truma derabanan. But he says galusenu in bezin shepikhu al adover. But nowadays, as I mentioned earlier, we don't have a bezin to supervise this. Our minhag is that we don't have the luxury to be so stringent to impose higher standards. So, as you said, somebody comes in and they say they're a Kohen. Are you going to get into a fight with them or whatever? So therefore, we don't have a bezdin that really supervises or enforces a higher standard of scrutiny. L'chein actually tan the Kohen Truma the Dilma Apiasma Alahu Aviv. That's why we don't give Chalas Chutz La'aretz. And he quotes from the Gemara in Ksuvos that only when you have a bezdin can you assume that because a person is dochening, so that ascribes to them a certain high status of kahuna. If we had the ability, but if we really would be able to impose that we required edus of some sort for every single coin, so then we would be able to give them chalas chutz la'aretz. What about pinyon abein though? So he says, what's his explanation? Getting a rebach when you get pinyon abein, why do we allow that? So he says something absolutely astonishing. He says, Apogab, she knows the opinion of Bay and the coin. Ev Shemishim Shemba Zerebach, Shinogin Shakoin Maxim Kolecha Yoav the coin, Shemitok Moshiaxi Renu. He says that we give opinion of Bay because we know you're going to get the money back. Because what coin doesn't return the money? So not every single coin is going to return the money with respect to opinion of Bay. Right, not only that, but if you give the opinion of Bay money, it's Matana Manas the Hox here, it could be that if you don't do it the right way, that you won't be Yotzei the Mitzvah, because you look in Hilchos Pidyon HaBein, there's a difference between Matana Manas the Hoxer, and there's a difference between when you're giving, but there's like, you know, an expectation, it's not fully a Matana, an expectation you're going to get back. There's like a way very similar that you wouldn't be Yotzei at all. Therefore, he says I certainly understand the practice of Goanim who don't give back Pidyon HaBein money nowadays. But that's what the Chazon Ish says. But then he asks it further kash. He says, but then how can we make a bracha on duchening and pidyon bechor? Isn't that a possible bracha levatala? So he says, well, the truth of the matter is that our non-reliance upon the yuchus of Kohanim without further eidus is only a mala be'alma. L'nira the mehilchus Torah hin l'cheskasim l'chol dover. As far as the Torah is concerned, if there's a chazaka, presumption has been created that the person's a Kohen, so we rely upon that. But as far as making a bracha, we're not so incredibly worried about it because it's only a male to require a higher level of standard. But that's the Chazon Ish's explanation as to why it is that we don't give Chalas Chutz La'aretz to Kohanim. The Pesachei Tshuva quotes from the Abbas of Yaakov Emnin, who did have this, who does recommend that a person give the Pidyon HaBein money to as many Kohanim as possible, and every single Kohen should be Yachush Le'atzmo, that maybe what he's getting is Gezel, maybe he's not really a Kohen, and he should return it. But the Chassam Sofer, quoted here in the Pesachei Tshuva, at the end of Source Yud Ches and Siman Shenei, he wrote Bekitzer, Shedivrei Tshuva Shelas Yabetz B'zeh Ein Nirim Lo, that he doesn't agree with it. And you look in the Gilyon Marasha, he also quotes the Yabetz, who says, Shiroi Liftos Mikol Kohanim She'efsha Penyipaga Be'ekad Kohen Emes. And there was a story that the Vilna Gaon went to another Kohen to be poda himself and didn't rely upon the opinion of Bain of when he was a child, or he did it twice, but every single... No? I have 2 minutes. Oh, okay. Not that the Vilna Gaon did it twice, but that I have 2 minutes. So the... But apparently, the Vilna Gaon did not do that as a matter of course, and he only did it because he found like a Kohen, like a Rappaport or something he thought was particularly miyuchas. In fact, the Vilna Gaon himself held that nowadays you could give a chalas chutz la'aretz to a kohen. That's in Source Kaf from the Ma'aser Rav Osa Kufa Peites. But the Gilyon Marasha, and we'll finish with this, and then next time we'll talk about some of the graveyard markers and to what degree that can create a presumption or assumption of kahuna when a person discovers, oh, look at that, their granddaddy has the kohen fingers on their matzeva. But the Gilyon Marasha says that the practice of the abbots is Eina Mechuva. The person who's giving the pinyon of bein money to the Kohen is giving it to him because he really wants to be Yotzi the Mitzvah. He's giving with a full heart. So therefore, there is no Akshash of Gezel in such a case. Even if you are not 100% convinced that the person is a Kohen, the Kohen can keep the money, which is, of course, the most important thing to end this year with right now, just so everybody understands that. And Yetz Hashem, we will continue next Monday night.